Hello, everyone. This is Kevin McManus with Great Systems, and welcome to the Real Life Work Podcast. This is the weekend of January 21st, 2023. Today's topic on the podcast is a fairly popular one with me. See, for the last 20 years, I've been teaching the Taproot Root Cause Analysis process around the world, close to 450 courses now, and more often than not, the folks that come to the course are trying to get better at reactive problem solving and investigation process analysis. So in this podcast, we're going to focus on how to measure investigation process effectiveness. And I bring this up for two reasons. First of all, as many of you may know, I'm a measurement freak. Okay, I measure everything because I believe what gets measured gets done. I believe you have to measure systems to understand systems. And if you don't measure systems, it's very hard to know where to focus your attention towards improvement. That's just a concept that works for me for the 40 years plus of my career. However, when it comes to the investigation process itself or the problem-solving process itself, what fascinates me there is the number of people hours that we invest in such efforts and the importance that is attached to such efforts in terms of what the success means or the failure means. And yet we don't look at how effective things are other than does the problem come back or not? Or does the problem come back to the same magnitude? Or do we have something very horrible happen again? And those are very not so good ways to gauge process effectiveness, and it's very difficult to improve using those metrics. So, let's take a look at some alternatives. And this was all spurred a few years back when a friend of mine that I met in Taproot by the name of Grant asked me a very basic but meaningful question. He said, "What are your thoughts on how to measure investigation process effectiveness?" You know, I'd chat about it in one of the Edmonton classes, I believe, that he was in, one of the public courses I used to teach back in the day up in Edmonton, Alberta. And I was commenting on how people spent so many hours and so many dollars and so much effort and so much emotion doing investigations and not measuring the impact other than does the bad thing happen again or not, which isn't too good. And he went on to explain that he wanted my insights partially because he knew I measured. He knew I measured excessively in some people's minds, not in his, but in some people's minds. And more importantly, he was under pressure to focus on investigation timeliness. And this is way back in the day, and I think this has been corrected in his organization since then. But that's common with a lot of the investigators that I meet, is there's a big pressure, get the investigation done, get the investigation done. And that becomes the primary metric. Well, how should we measure investigation process effectiveness? Well, investigations are investigating problems. And like most work activities, that's a process. You know, it's a repetitive set of things we do. We go out, we collect evidence, we analyze the evidence, we look for root causes, we find the root causes, we write corrective actions and preventive actions to address what we find in terms of root causes. Very repetitive. Done in different ways, but very repetitive, very similar steps. If you've read my Vital Signs measurement book, if you've sat in on one of my measurement workshops, or if you've simply done a lot of measurement yourself, you know that processes produce a variety of results with each process cycle. In this case, with each problem analyzed or each investigation performed. And it's not just one or two results. It's not just a time result or a dollar result. At a minimum, all processes have vital signs that relate to time, cost, quality from the customer's perspective, morale or teamwork from the team's perspective, and then always safety, health, environment, security dimensions. All too often, however, we place too much focus on the time measure. When are we going to get it done? We have to have it done within 48 hours. In doing so, we often compromise other results like quality, morale, and teamwork, and safety. There's trade-offs there. That's the way a system works. It's much more like an equalizer than a volume button on a radio. We have to find the balance between the different settings to optimize process performance. For example, I frequently see people do poor root cause analysis and write weak corrective actions. And they do that to get their problem-solving work done on time, to close out the investigation. and the big bad thing doesn't happen again, but the little problems that contributed to the path to failure, they do continue to come back and they continue to waste time and money. So think about yourself. Is investigation timeliness the primary measure you focus on? If so, you might not find the true root causes of your problems. You might rush through evidence collection. You might rush through data analysis. You might rush through root cause analysis and corrective action development. Worse yet, you might fail to notice that your fixes fail all too often. You're so busy trying to fix problems, you don't spend time to look and see if your fixes are working. Ironically, timeliness is a quality measure. We want to meet one of our customers' key requirements, timeliness. Unfortunately, we often compromise our ability to meet other customer requirements when we focus too much on time. So there's many different ways to measure investigation process effectiveness. I'm just going to focus on the basics here because, like I said, most people don't even look at cycle time. They have a boundary they want to stay within, but they don't trend cycle time over time, look at cycle time variation, try to reduce that variation over time, and optimize the cycle time itself. You know, they don't go that far with it. So we're just going to focus on the basics, because if we can do four or five basics well, you will significantly improve your investigation process. And if you want to talk about this topic in more detail, feel free to connect with me. And you can do that through LinkedIn. You can send me an email. You can shoot me a text. We can set up a Zoom call. You can attend my 2-day mistake measurement trending predictive analytics workshop that I'm having at the Taproot Summit in just a couple of months. There's a variety of ways we can dig into your particular challenges in more detail. But with no further ado, here are some key investigation process measures that most people should track, but often don't track. First and foremost, how much investigation process time do you invest? And I'm talking about two time dimensions here. We've already mentioned the first one. What is our average investigation process cycle time in days from the time the investigation notification hits to when it's considered complete? And we should track our milestone times, so we know our incremental times for our process steps. Like I said, we often just focus on the completion time, and often it is just a boundary to stay within, not something we trend and try to improve. That's just one key time metric, though. The other one is probably more important because there's much more waste that occurs there, and that's how many people hours did we invest to achieve this number of days cycle time. We want to involve multiple people in collecting evidence and developing our fixes. This creates ownership. This helps eliminate bias. This helps us get a well-rounded view both of what happened and what needs to change. Okay? So how many people hours did we invest to achieve the number of days cycle time? All right. And it's not always the same. On some calendar days, only a couple people work on the project. On other calendar days, we have a team meeting and we spend all day and we, you know, generate 60 people hours. But if we don't track the number, it's hard to optimize process cycle times. Just the other day, I'm teaching a Taproot class. And I hear a common mistake come up that I've heard again and again with groups. And they think that when they're working on investigations, when they're working on problems, the only work that occurs is in the meeting. If you listen to my last podcast about team effectiveness, I talked about how in this day and age in particular, we have to have that optimized blend of synchronous teamwork and asynchronous teamwork. You know, we have to have times when one and two people can go out together, or one person can go out together. They feed the team data repository. The team stays abreast of what's being put in the data repository. We come to the team meeting ready to make some decisions, come up with some new plans of action, go out and do it again. And the best teams probably spend 20% of their time in the team meeting and 80% of their time in an orchestrated, focused, coordinated way between the team meetings. And that's how you get your best results. You do not get your best results with 90% of your team time spent in the meeting and 10% of it spent outside the meeting. It's a huge waste of time. In opposite, we often expect one or two people to collect all the evidence when you should use a swim lanes approach to evidence collection. And I have that PDF posted in many places on my website. but we lose process efficiency and effectiveness when we try to put them all in the same room at the same time and only use that strategy to work on the problem. We make it worse when we often lack good group facilitators, and it is magnified horribly when we fail to collect a well-rounded set of evidence. And ask yourself, what is a well-rounded set of evidence? When you go to the scene, do you know what to look for? Do you know what to take pictures for? Do you know what to observe? Do you know what to ask about? Do you know what to simulate? When you look at paperwork or tablet information that drove the work or taught the person how to do the work or reinforced key rules that went with the work, do you know what to look for? Do you know what best practice is? Do you know what faulty design looks like? Can you look at other factors that may have affected performance? Do you know how to interview folks in an effective, supportive way that helps them give you the best information possible for understanding what went on? So you can see all throughout the investigation process, there's opportunities for errors that result in wasted time. And time can always be converted into cost. I firmly believe that if managers knew the real cost of their process challenges, they'd make very different decisions. And I say this because I'm fortunate. I grew up in organizations that forced me to learn my process cost. And then after I learned those numbers, it became a practice. And then I saw the value it made, both to me as an individual in my work career, but more importantly, helping organizations improve. Because if you know where the leverage of dollars is, you know where the leverage of time is, you know where the leverage of waste is, and you can make improvements much more quickly. So do you track the cost of your investigation process? In a simple sense, it's dollars times time. At a minimum, you should know the cost of the people hours you invest. That's leader standard work. That time could be spent elsewhere. You could split a team in half and work on two problems. How much effectiveness would you lose? You should also track the cost of process errors, if you can. Did we lose a day because we had to go back and re-interview five people? Did we lose 3 days because we had to drive back to the job site and take pictures we forgot to take? We don't have to have exact numbers. Your numbers will get better as time goes on. You can take a weighted average wage rate for your team to give you a reference of labor cost for the team. But again, dollars is not a number we're trying to minimize. We're trying to optimize what we're investing here. So we're looking for correlations between where we spend our time, how that gets translated into cost, and how that gives us benefits in terms of investigation quality, evidence quality, and most importantly, corrective action quality, preventive action quality, and a reduction in leading indicators of process problems. Now, it may sound like a given that safety is a measure for the investigation process itself, but how many investigations teams track it? It's one of the easiest measures to obtain. I have seen teams have people become injured as a result of the investigation process itself. They've stepped in holes, they've tripped over things, they've cut their hands. This does happen. And we should capture that, and we should work to improve that. At a minimum, we should track whether or not we experience any type of injury, no matter how minor, as a result of our investigative efforts. We should keep in mind that if we fail to secure a scene, release a scene too quickly, continue to work when hazards exist, we raise the potential for this to happen. And those, to me, are investigator performance errors. You know, similar to a problem solver in a food plant violating GMPs while they're out there troubleshooting a production problem. It's a red flag. But that's investigation process safety. We do want to look at investigation process morale and teamwork. We want to maintain the team. We want to build team cohesion. How often do we damage our company culture when leaders investigate problems in an accusatory manner? How often do we blame people instead of systems and damage our leadership credibility? Morale and teamwork are not that hard to measure. Unfortunately, we often fail to even give these factors consideration when we look at investigation process effectiveness. Now, surveys serve as the primary tool for measuring an investigation process or a problem-solving effort from a morale and teamwork perspective. So, for example, you can use a simple 3-5 question post-investigation survey to see how the team felt about how things went. You can do the same thing with your customers. Were they happy with the investigation content? Were they happy with the investigation scope? Were they happy with the report? Were they happy with the recommendations? You can do it right after the investigation report is completed. You can follow up 3 to 6 months later to see if satisfaction is being maintained or enhanced. You can validate your results that you obtained post-investigation by placing a couple of questions with an investigation or problem-solving process involvement focus in your annual workforce climate survey, and that gives you some checks and balances, such as, to what degree are the investigation process activities you participate in conducted effectively? In what ways do you feel the investigation and problem-solving efforts at your job site contribute to a more effective work climate? Questions of that nature. Investigation process quality may be one of the tougher things to measure. Now, the key question to ask here is, what are the indicators that serve as proof that our fixes are working? Many people feel that if the incident or problem being investigated does not occur again, if the customer doesn't complain again, if the person doesn't break their arm again, then the fixes were effective. There's nothing wrong with the use of such indicators, but I'd consider the use of more error-sensitive leading indicators on our investigation process effectiveness scorecard. In the best problem-solving and investigative efforts, we look for the errors and system gaps that led to the bad things. That's what we want to see the reduction in. Are we reducing our system gaps? Are we closing those? Are we eliminating those? Are we making our work systems more robust? Are our error rates going down? Are our equipment failure rates going down? Behavior-based observation rates, for example, provide a better indication of fix effectiveness. If you're tracking the path to failure, the chain of causation, you can look at, are equipment failures that led to environmental issues, are those failures reducing in duration, reducing in frequency? You know, if we have people not wearing the proper protective equipment and that's leading to hand injuries, instead of focusing just on hand injury occurrence, let's focus on the percent of time we see people effectively wearing hand protection. Waiting for another bad thing to happen is not the best way to know if your fixes work or not. Instead, we want to search for trends that show reductions in the errors, safeguard gaps, and equipment failures that led to the problem. Similarly, we should measure to see if the root causes we found now occur less frequently. So let's think about this. You know, we stayed within the realm of investigation process safety, quality, teamwork morale, timeliness, cost, but that set of five measures is probably better than simply looking at, did we get it done yet? Did we get it done yet? And like I said, there's other measures we could track, and this is just the start. This is just coming up with the counts and ratios that we want to trend. There's also the process of trending over time, understanding process variation and the defects that create that variation, effectively reducing the defects to reduce the variation, and that will naturally help you make the process more controllable, understandable, and then it can be more easily optimized. If you trend your measures over time, you'll find some great indicators of investigation process effectiveness. Experiment. Track 5 to 10 different things with each investigation that you do. I've given you some great starters here. Problem complexity and other factors. Introduce variation into your data. Try to standardize your investigation process as much as you can. Remember, it's almost always people in leadership roles that are devoting most of the hours to an investigative effort. Therefore, it is leader standard work that must be managed. We can segment our results to help us find our problem areas. We can segment by investigation team. We can segment by process type. We can segment by steps of the investigation process itself. We really don't know if and where a process needs improvement until we begin to track its core safety, quality, people, cost, and profitability measures. I hope everybody keeps improving. This is the end of the podcast for this week. I'll have another one ready to go for you folks in about 7 days. Please keep in mind, I got two events coming up. One is February 15th. It is in Louisville, Kentucky. It is a 4-hour overview of my mistake proofing workshop. And I'm very much looking forward to Conroe, Texas, April 24th and 25th. I'm doing a live workshop down there for the 2023 Annual Taproot Summit. And this is a brand new workshop that builds on work that Mark Paradise, who created Taproot, and myself have been doing over the last 20 years in the field of trending, measurement, and now predictive analytics. I don't want to go too far out on a limb, but I would like to think that I'm going to even teach folks some strategies that'll help them improve their fantasy sports performance. It's one of the easiest ways sometimes to understand metrics. But we're going to look at measurement, trending, and predictive analytics. We're going to help you learn how to measure any kind of work process you'd like to measure. So join me, Conroe, Texas, Horseshoe Bay, April 24, 25, the first 2 days of the 5-day Taproot Summit. Anyway, have a great 2023. This is Kevin McManus, Chief Excellence Officer, Great Systems. Keep improving, and I'll be back to chat with you folks in about a week. Cheers.